Hello, and welcome back to the Health Revival Show. I'm excited for today's topic because I want every single person in the world who's had their gallbladder removed to hear this. So your job, if you are listening, is to share this because I bet you, you know someone who's had their gallbladder removed. Maybe you don't talk about it over wine. I don't, you know, assume that most people do. We talk about our health all the time in functional medicine, but it is so, so common. And maybe as we go through this, you're like, oh man, I know that this person, maybe my friend Sally is mentioning that she's having some of these symptoms. Send this to her because we are going to talk about not only having the gallbladder removed, but what your doctors don't tell you and informed consent. And for me, it really blows my mind that there's not even a discussion of bile acid diarrhea or bile acid reflux, because the end of the day here, like your gallbladder being taken out, the gallbladder is just the fall guy. It's not the root cause. It's not going to fix everything. So that is your job. If you're listening to this podcast, help us help others by sharing this, rating us, subscribing. And we're going to get into it today because we want to keep this short and sweet for you. We know that so many people have gone in, maybe it's an emergency situation. And of course, if you're at the risk of sepsis, absolutely get it out. But mistakenly had their gallbladders taken out and said, I wish I wouldn't have done that, right? I wish I would have worked with somebody or learned more about how to support my body, because on the other side of having your gallbladder removed, even though, yes, technically we can live without it, just like we can live without an appendix, there are repercussions. There is a cost. God designed you with this tiny little organ that stores and concentrates your bile, which is so important. And you're going to hear a lot about bile from us even more because we have so many things on the horizon. We're traveling and we're going to be speaking about this in Miami, the gut, liver, and immune connection. This is intricately connected to that as well as SIBO. So if you've had your gallbladder removed, stick with us. This is going to get juicy and I'm excited. But I'm not excited about how common this is.
Oh, so common. So 750,000 to 1 million surgeries per year is the estimate of how many gallbladder surgeries are actually done in the US, just in the US per year. And like Liz was saying, honestly, the only absolute time that it is necessary to remove the gallbladder is in like an acute cholecystitis, all the itises, to where you actually have a gallstone that is blocking one of the cystic pathways, like that it is in one of the tubes and it is stuck and blocking, and it is creating in turn downstream issues where like there could be a rupturing, there could be obviously sepsis situations. Otherwise, guess what? It can actually very often be saved and solved. Like, there are many situations where we have saved gallbladders, where people have come to us with known gall sludge, known gallstones present, and you can turn that around. So yes, sometimes it has to come out. Is that always the case? Actually, rarely. Mm-hmm. Many people are like, oh, I have it scheduled for 2 weeks from now. It's like, okay, what have you done?
Yeah.
What could we be doing instead?
And like, what if your doctors asked you? Like, we just posted on my Instagram today that in the wellness and medical community, we need to ask better questions. We need to ask, what is your health history here, right? Like, how is your digestion? So when we really think about this, like I mentioned before, the gallbladder is the fall guy. He's not the criminal. The reason why people start having issues is because of impaired detox, poor bile flow, whether that has become peanut butter-like, it's very sluggish, or it's insufficient. Again, things are getting stuck. You're developing stones. When we don't have the right building blocks and the nutrients and the cofactors to help us with bile, things start to go south quickly. Marry that with estrogen and estrogen's impact on bile and the gut and bacteria or lipopolysaccharides impact on bile, inflammation seeping from the gut into the bloodstream, going in line to the liver, creating liver inflammation, slowing down bile. Like, it's this whole negative feedback loop. I don't know if that's, but it's all interconnected, right? And so when we think about this, this also goes hand in hand. I heard a stat this morning, 15 to 30% of individuals with type 2 diabetes and type 1 diabetes have had their gallbladders removed because of how also blood sugar is such a big issue. And we know that creates a big stress on the body. We know that when we're thinking about the signaling, so we're going to get into some of the receptors and signaling here, but that is going to impact like your islet cells and the pancreas releasing insulin so you can keep your blood sugar levels stable. You combine this with low thyroid signaling, right? To keep things moving. Maybe you are constipated. Maybe you're having diarrhea. There could be a lot of issues going on here. And even from a place of gastroparesis, for example, which we're seeing more and more because individuals are taking the GLP-1s, they're not being told how to support digestion. This is something that will also impact the bacterial balance in the gut and this dysbiosis, as we call it, an imbalance between the good and the bad guys, more of the bad than we want that are fermenting, creating gases. Oh, that also impacts our liver and bile flow because bile should be flowing fluidly. Even about every time you eat, it's 13 to 15 times bile trickles through the small intestine to act as your antimicrobial. And then it also activates motilin. It signals all these other things for the liver, for the pancreas, you know, and for your digestion ability to remove toxins, magnetize, remove them from the body. So while removing your gallbladder can stop some of the attacks that you're having, or maybe like bile acid reflux, nausea, you know, you're feeling overly full, really upset stomach, maybe pain in the right side shoulder pain or other issues here. So you take the gallbladder out, but it's not going to fix the terrain that caused the problem in the first place. And in fact, because bile is so important for your overall health, your immune system, it makes things worse in the long term if you're not supporting it properly.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the thing that a lot of people also don't realize is not, you can't just like take bile or just take taurine or take some of these things. Can they be supportive? Of course. But like Liz is saying, you have to resolve why the gallbladder is becoming so irritated and why the bile is becoming such a problem. And that goes to how is what's inputs is happening in the body. Like how much are you being exposed to toxin wise? What is the state of the gut? What is going on inflammatory wise? Blood sugar, like she mentioned, creates high levels of inflammation in the body to begin with. And so it's more of an inflammatory problem at its root too, that then starts to put stress on other systems. And ultimately the gallbladder becomes kind of this like bad guy because it can't keep up. Not because there's a problem with it. It's just like under so much strain and it creates a lot of localized pain in that area and can create kind of these attacks ultimately, which are extremely painful. And so say we do have to go and get it out. That is what this podcast is around. Like if you didn't know all of this, if you maybe were in one of those emergency situations where you did have to have it removed for your health purposes and tracing back just a couple of steps, a lot of times this happens after pregnancy and during perimenopause because of the shifts in estrogen that happen. Your estrogen levels are very high when you are pregnant. And so it puts a lot more strain on the system of the liver gallbladder during pregnancy. And then postpartum, you lose a lot of weight, hormones come back online, both big stressors to that system. And so a lot of times people end up in places where they have to have it removed because they have not basically focused on the terrain of what's happening in those environments. Mm. Same thing with perimenopause. You go through very erratic ups and downs of estrogen, which puts a lot of stress on the consistency of bile, but also on the detoxification of your hormones via the liver. So bile is essentially, I think of it like a taxi cab of your hormones to get out of the body via the gut and stool. And so if you are having a lot of things, lots of taxi cabs are needed, then you start to put a strain on this organ. And so that's why in those times in life, it tends to be a lot more common. But if we've had it removed, because a lot of people get the surgery, maybe their pain goes away, maybe it doesn't. Mm-hmm. We get, you know, ghost pains a lot of times with gallbladder removal surgeries. But what we often see is fast forward a few months, maybe you make it a couple of years, but now we are having bloating. Or a lot of people immediately after having it out are having urgent diarrhea because they cannot regulate the bile flow that is now happening because the gallbladder is what does that to begin with. Reflux, you get bile acid reflux can be very common in these. Food, which a sign of that is that like Pepcid or PPIs don't touch it. So if you are not seeing anything touch the reflux, you can bet your bottom dollar that it's probably more of a bile acid reflux. Food doesn't sit right. It feels very heavy. And then stubborn belly weight. And we actually see a lot of immune activity. So not in research specifically, but just clinically, what we have seen is that autoimmunity actually rises. Mm-hmm. So gallbladder removal, we already talked about, extremely common. And it is unfortunately one of those situations where when you have it removed, your doctor just doesn't tell you. Like, they are not informing you, hey, now that you do not have this organ that, okay, you can live without, but it is a very critical organ to the body and the detoxification system. It stores and concentrates bile. It helps release this bolus of bile when you eat high fats, or if you're going through high periods of detoxification. Unfortunately, now, again, I'm sure your doctor did not sit down and tell you this when they removed it. Now, bile is just going to be this slow drip. Think of it like a leaky faucet, just a little bit at a time. You can't turn the faucet on higher. It just leaks. And so for some people, that means not enough bile power when you need it. So you eat a high fat meal, you get very uncomfortable. Maybe you're more constipated, or you get that heaviness in your stomach, or too much bile starts to hit the colon at the wrong time. And that is more of the urgency and diarrhea that we see. And so this is why the post cholestectomy syndrome is a very real thing. Fatty food intolerance, nausea, reflux, bloating, indigestion, diarrhea, upper abdominal pain can even show up months to years later because the body just cannot regulate itself. And so it is not IBS. There is a strong attention in the literature to bile acid diarrhea after cholestectomy. So up to 57% in certain studies, and a lot of times not diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And so people just like are dealing with diarrhea, tons of nutrient deficiencies that start to happen from that. And they think that this is how I have to live now. Like, this is what it is. This is what happens after I have my gallbladder removed. Maybe I don't have pain, but now I have urgent diarrhea and I can only eat a certain list of foods.
Yeah. And the thing that's quite angering is that they don't even tell you, hey, this is what you should be doing from a dietary perspective. This is how you should be supporting your body to replace these things, because liver and bile are not just side players in motility. We've said this time and time again on our podcast, whether it's related to SIBO or chronic constipation, many times it's a bile issue, a liver and bile issue, because these are regulators of motility. So it's not just for fat digestion. Yes, that's huge, but it's a strong signaling molecule. So when we think about the small intestine, bacterial overgrowth, and we think about the immune system, what happens is that bile, it basically triggers, if you will, two different receptors. One is called the FXR, farnesoid X receptor, and the TGR5. This is your G protein coupled bile acid receptor. Bunch of jargon, right? But when we think about these are nuclear receptors. They are a cell surface receptor that influences our intestinal movement, fluid secretion, and the motor migraining complex to move things through at the right rate. They also signal for insulin, and they play a huge role with how your immune system is understanding what all is going on here. Because when things are thrown off in a symphony, it doesn't sound very good, right? Like if you go to the symphony orchestra and it's beautiful, everything is working according to how it should. Everyone is, you know, marching to the beat of the music that they should be playing. But when somebody else is, you know, not reading the music sheet properly, and they're just out there beating the drum to their own tune, they're throwing everything off. And then everybody is like in chaos, right? So when bile flow is inadequate and these receptors that are responding are not communicating appropriately, this is really where we start to see things go south. And even in the small intestine, the duodenum, the upper portion of the small intestine, things start to really get impaired there. Or again, like Becca was saying, you're getting that bile acid diarrhea because you're getting a flood of bile and a flood of water. So it's just really, really important to be thinking that this post gallbladder removal digestive issue is not just IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. Well, we know that your gut is irritated because you're having symptoms, right? And then we also have to go a layer deeper and look at what else is going on with dysbiosis. So I won't bore you with a lot of the stats, but I do want to bring something up before we go into, you know, actionable things here, that there is a ton of research linked to fatty liver disease and metabolic issues after gallbladder removal, because again, bile is not stored, concentrated, and released in the right amount at the right time. It's just that continuous drip, and maybe we're not supporting. Okay. And so we see there's multiple papers finding associations here with a higher risk of liver disease in a large 2023 systematic review and meta-analysis, which we know is massive sample sizes across different studies, reported post-gallbladder removal was associated with higher odds of liver disease, including non-alcoholic fatty liver. OK, Okay. So again, this goes back to the gut liver axis that we've been talking about on various other podcasts. There's also detailed reviews discussing how gallbladder removal shifts bile acid signaling and metabolism. Imagine that. So this is going to impact glucose, insulin resistance patterns, lipids, and your liver fat. So we're treating this as a acute situation. We're just going to remove it. Yet we are turning our eye or, you know, turning, you know, our focus off on things that really should be addressed because this is a huge red flag. So that in addition to SIBO, right? It is very, very prevalent in SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Again, I've already mentioned bile flows through as an antimicrobial, the small intestine to keep bacteria in check. If you've got fermentation of bacteria and you've got gas production, you've got some level of SIBO. And honestly, it's dysbiosis, right? It's bacteria thriving in a place that they should not thrive, overgrowing. They should not be overgrowing. And so we can try to outcompete with different types of probiotics and spore-forming probiotics. But at the end of the day, we have to regulate the microbiome and the gut balance so that we can restore function, we can regulate intestinal inflammation, and not have this turn into something more serious long-term. So if I had my gallbladder removed, here's exactly what I would do. Number one, I would identify what my symptom pattern is and I would do stool testing and I'd figure out what's going on in my microbiome. But you can maybe be in one of these doors or lanes, okay? So lane A, if you're struggling with fat intolerance, right? So you can no longer enjoy a steak or a burger or fries or something like that. You're noticing floating stools, maybe they're pebbly, maybe you're experiencing a lot of that nausea, or you see greasy kind of like film in your stool. Think that this is not enough bile with your meals, okay? Lane two is I have bile acid diarrhea. I have urgency. I'm going to poo my pants. I need a shark kit. loose stools, diarrhea that came again only following surgery and removal. Bile acids are spilling into the colon. So that's a dumping and water, and it's flooding the colon and giving you that urgency. Lane C here is that you have the reflux, you have bloating, you have upper belly pressure and abdominal pain. So this could be poor timing of the bile, gut motility and dysbiosis pattern. And again, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, could be low stomach acid, it could be pancreatic insufficiency. There could be a lot of things going on upstream. So with this, first input is the biggest thing that you can adjust, right? So change how you're eating for 14 days. Go more on the simple, bland side, smaller, more frequent meals, chew your food very well, reduce your fats. So we know that big meals and high fat meals are going to overwhelm the need for bile and timing. And so that's going to increase the likelihood that you're going to get that dumping. I would not do keto. I know so many people have had their gallbladder removed and they're like, I'm just going to go on a keto diet. And it turns out disastrous. That can really backfire. So I would not do that until things are more regulated. Add soluble fiber. So think slow down for soluble fiber every day and work your way up to a good amount that you can tolerate. So here's where I would think of like oats, right? I'm blanking off the top of my head some of the soluble ones, but look on, you know, Google or on my Instagram when I've got images there. And then I would absolutely, and honestly, this is in all cases, add bitter foods or bitters, digestive bitters before your meals. So you can do this lemon water upon waking. I love that. I love actually the Suja blend right now from Costco. It's great and it's been on sale. So I've been buying it and I'll do like a half a bottle every morning. Or you can just do lemon water with a pinch of sea salt. When you're building your meals, I want you to think about things that are going to bring you a little bit of that digestive bitter taste. So this could be arugula. That's personally my favorite. Radishes, those are great too. But you can do things like dandelion greens, beet greens, endive, all of those things. Citrus, of course, are going to give you that bitter taste. What's happening here if you do this even before? So if you had a tincture of a digestive bitter, what's happening is it's telling your brain we're going to now prepare for digestion. And that's going to communicate to other organ and digestive parts of the digestive system that we need to start releasing enzymes to break our food down. We need to prepare stomach acid and upregulate that so that we can break proteins and things down. And we need to prepare for the pancreatic insulin and bile release as well. So digestive enzymes can be great with, you know, your food and things like that. I would support that again if I saw someone had like a pancreatic insufficiency and really needed that. But bitters can go a long way here. And a lot of this, by the way, can apply if you are having attacks right now, right? So you could do a lot of that, but even more so if I was like under gallbladder attack, Things that I would do is probably a 2 to 3 day fast, but including a lot of support for the liver from milk thistle, dandelion, peppermint. You could even do this with like beet juices. You could do a blend there. You could do bone broth daily, but I would really lower the amount of food, lower the amount of fats, keep things more on that kind of bland, low fat, low fiber. Let's think brat diet here, right? That could be easy, soft foods to digest, no raw veggies, and do more of the juices and, you know, help your digestive system kind of just calm down. And then if you were having a gallbladder attack, a couple of things that you can do is a warm flaxseed drink. So here you would take 2 tablespoons of flaxseeds into a small pot. So 3 cups of water, simmer that for like 20 minutes and then strain it into a mug. So now you have a flaxseed drink. Drink that liquid. The second thing you can do is warm apple cider vinegar. So this is really actually helpful for nausea. If you've got bile acid reflux that's making you nauseous, do 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar in 1 cup of warm water and sip during an attack. You can use castor oil packs. You can do a strong peppermint tea with half a lemon in water as well. You can use magnesium sprayer lotions, heating pad over the gallbladder. All of those things could be helpful if you are under attack. But at the end of the day, you still need to figure out, and this is where we test and address what's going on, what's driving this. Is estrogen my issue? Is dysbiosis my issue? Is my liver my issue? What else is happening? And then what Becca can talk about here is, you know, targeted support that we generally use, but we're going to say, obviously, this is not medical advice. These would be things you'd be working with a provider to do in your protocols.
Yep. So a lot of clients come to us that either have had their gallbladders removed or they're having upper right quadrant pain. They are having a chronic constipation. Chronic constipation, we haven't touched on this as much, but chronic constipation in almost every scenario has some level of bile dysfunction going on. It's kind of like a hidden stressor for the body that people don't realize when they're chronically constipated. They think I'm going to do, you know, warm lemon water. Guess what lemon water helps do? It helps stimulate bile, right? The bitterness of it helps stimulate bile. People think I'm going to use magnesium citrate. That's just pulling water into stools. But at the end of the day, the bile is what helps ultimately break down the fats, which then helps with the constipation. So in supplement world, bitters is probably going to be one of the best tolerated for most cases, because bitters is going to not only stimulate bile production, but it is also going to help stimulate stomach acid, and it's going to support digestive enzymes. It's kind of like an all-around balanced digestive support, whereas in other scenarios, we will directly give ox bile if someone is more on the constipated side, they're having some of, you know, the floating stools, the showing signs of not having enough bile per meal. Ox bile specifically can be put in those places. If you are having urgency and diarrhea, that's not where we'd go, because that is, you don't need more bile at this time. Bile is what's causing the urgency and the diarrhea typically. So bitters, I really like in a lot of these situations. It's very well tolerated. It's usually a tincture. You can mix it if you really need to in a little bit of water, but that's great to put in place first. Taurine and glycine. So taurine and glycine are very helpful because they are building blocks of bile. They are ultimately the raw resources that you need to adequately make healthy bile. Taurine, you do need to be careful with, because in high doses for really long periods of time, it does show in research to have some risk cardiovascularly. So if you ever notice the energy drinks that have really high levels of taurine in them, there's a correlation there. But you just need to monitor how much taurine you put in place. A lot of times the blend products have some taurine in it. So we usually start at about 200 to 500 milligrams of taurine, depending on the case. And it will help kind of give the raw resources. Glycine is another one. I love putting glycine before bed as well, because glycine also lowers core body temperature. And it helps kind of bring the body into a parasympathetic state. So glycine is a very multi-purpose product that we will often use. Phosphatidylcholine. Phosphatidylcholine helps with bile flow. Phosphatidylcholine also is very supportive of the cell health. So we will use these a lot of times in mitochondrial cases, chronic fatigue cases. So again, a crossover product that is very well tolerated in most individuals. And then Tudka is a secondary bile acid. So ox bile is a primary bile acid. Tudka is a secondary bile acid. They serve slightly different purposes. I really like Tudka in cases where we notice that the liver is very inflamed and it's kind of transferring into like elevated liver enzymes. And you can see the stress happening in the entire system of the liver gallbladder and that biliary tree. So Tudka can be very helpful. And digestive enzymes can also be very helpful. But these are all very right person, right place, right time situations. And again, like Liz said, this is not medical advice. This is just what we often will use in cases. But you have to be smart about when it's being used, right? Because we explained multiple different scenarios that can happen with gallbladder issues and or removal of gallbladder post-gallbladder issues. So depending on the person, you may use some of these, but if you are, again, having more of that urgency diarrhea, we need to talk about how we can manage that. In those cases, we will sometimes use like a Saccharomyces boulardii, we'll use, you know, a psyllium husk, we'll use something that will help bulk up and kind of crowd out the bad bacteria in the small intestine and can slow the diarrhea in those cases. So if symptoms persist, this is where you have to do testing. Like, we need to see what's going on in terms of liver markers. What is ALT, AST, GGT levels, all the different liver enzymes? What's fasting insulin? What's A1C levels? What are the lipids doing, right? Because of that non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and that metabolic association literature, we need to see if it's affecting those systems. And then if diarrhea and urgency, bile acid diarrhea evaluation. This is where we run a GI map. This is where we might look at bile acids in serum. Like, we need to see how extreme the situation is and what else is contributing to it. Because again, if we're coming from a root cause analysis on all of this, yes, support bile flow. Yes, support the liver, support the whole biliary tree. But what's going on in the GI system further down? What's going on in the small intestine? What's going on in bacterial balance? What's going on in terms of inflammation in the entire system of the body, right? So like, where is contributing to why the gallbladder has become such a problem and why bile flow has become such a problem? Because I think of bile as like this dish detergent for the body. It's basically cleaning and cleansing the entire GI system. And it's doing so by kind of trapping hormones and toxins, fat-soluble toxins, mycotoxins, mold, all of these things that the body's trying to get out. And so if we don't fix the input of all of that, if we aren't fixing why bile has become so strained, yes, you can support bile until the cows come home, but like, you're going to end up with the same problems. So full body analysis, get further testing. If you do not know already, our team does that. Like, this is the type of situation our team works with and types of cases that our teams work with. So in the show notes, you will find a link. You can schedule a call to talk to our sales team and see if working with our team is the right fit, right? It's a free call, free consult. Tell them about your case and see if what we do feels like it would work for your scenario, because we work with very complex cases that often these things have been going on for a while. It's really sad how long people let these things go on and think that it's normal or just live with it. Mm-hmm. Multiple times a week, I have conversations in my DMs of like, I had my gallbladder removed 20 years ago, and this has been going on for 10 years. And it's like, oh my gosh.
Even in the side of gastroparesis, I was studying something this morning, and there's truly only 1-2% of the population has gastroparesis, which is like the slow emptying of the stomach. But you have to think about everything else that is going on within the terrain, right? So we say nose to tail, essentially. And you are not going to see dysbiosis on a colonoscopy or on a scope. They're looking at the health of the tissue. They're not looking at the bacterial balance, which is really, in my opinion, negligent, because that is what drives inflammation in the gut. And so we need to regulate that. And this is why in our practice, we test and we address accordingly. More and more, I will say, I am seeing some GI doctors get on board with the stool analysis, at least a handful of them now that have really appreciated, because I will refer people in when it is appropriate to go get scoped, to go get their colonoscopy. We want to make sure, especially with the colon cancer rates that are rising in people under the age of 50, this is important not to ignore those signs and symptoms, but understand that your colonoscopy is not going to show you bacterial balance. That is something we are going to identify on a stool test, and we're going to be able to see other intestinal health markers related to how you're breaking down your fats, your pancreatic function, inflammation, all of that. And some of them are gold standard in terms of the FIT test, right? So fecal occult blood, we're looking at that. And then we're also looking at calprotectin, which is the gold standard for inflammation. So these things should go hand in hand together. Both have their place. If you're dealing with chronic digestive issues, that's the route that honestly everyone should be taking, because you want to get ahead of this before it gets worse.